Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you, too.
Shut up.
What?
No. I thought you were going to say Marge.
No, you sound great.
I thought you were going to say Marge Simpson. No. That's what I was waiting for. I'm all, shut up.
Yeah, today we have Marge Simpson as co-host.
That's because Typhoid Bill brought back the Everglades Voodoo Blue from Florida. That's why you don't go on vacation. You bring back bad germs.
Yeah, you go to a foreign land.
You're sick for 2 weeks.
Yeah, you bring back stuff that's never been seen before.
Yeah, we went to the happiest place on Earth, and then we left with all their germs.
Yeah.
It's probably how they plan it. That's probably why it's so happy there. Yeah. They pack the germs in our bags and send it home with us.
It was a successful run. Too,
right now, Disney's going, how do we get this gal to do our marketing? She's awesome. Or not.
Or not.
So, when I'm not playing Marge Simpson, I'm Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff. And our sponsor today is Team
Neither
Power.
Neither Disney nor Marge Simpson?
No, they're not on the payroll today. Team Power, our local John Deere Kubota tractor dealer up in Shasta Lake City, is sponsoring our show, and they're at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. And anything tractors, service parts, repairs, sales, they do it all there. And go by and see them. They've got some great deals going on tractors right now. Got some used stuff in the yard, and their service department is caught up. So if you got some service work to do, go in and see them. They can get you in and out fairly quickly. Their phone number is 226-9226.
And their super spectacular website is?
ReddingTractors.com. Yeah, go by and see them on the web.
You can't screw that up.
They got tractors, pricing, everything's right there for you to look at. And go by and see them. So there you have it.
Well, I'm trying desperately to start my computer so that we can actually get our guest on Skype.
We have both of our
guys on from Security Solutions Technologies today.
Yeah, Chuck Floyd and Bruce Moran, both.
Give us the rundown since you've got a computer that works.
Well, let's see here. Bruce is with Security Solutions Technology.
Check.
And Chuck is...
Same thing.
They're both working cohorts there.
Give me your computer.
I was gonna wing it, but I guess I gotta read it.
I was like, really? So Chuck is the chief executive officer, and Bruce Moran is the national security advisor.
Oh, and there you go. See, I knew that.
Yeah, but it's written right there.
It's
really big print,
it.
And you weren't getting to it. So, Security Solutions Technology is a veteran-owned company that provides federal government consulting, IT professional services, security assessments, cybersecurity, geospatial program and lifecycle management, change management.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't want a whole lot of that in this midterm. Logistics and financial consulting. So they are all over the place. They work with all sorts of government entities, and it looks like we got Bruce on the line, and my computer still won't start, so we can't get Chuck on Skype. You know, it was just on my computer at home 15 minutes ago. Now, probably half hour ago now, to be honest. 30 minutes ago, my computer worked fine. And right now, it just gives me the little, it has the word Surface in white across the screen.
I'm like...
Across the black screen, Surface.
I'm like the great Swami right now. I see in my future a trip to the computer store to buy a new computer.
You have no idea.
I think it's coming.
I'm waiting for the new Surface to come out, and it's not coming out. But you know what? This kind of thing is bad. Bad, bad, bad.
Yeah. I offered to buy you a new one for Christmas, but she didn't want it.
It wasn't out yet.
No, she wants the newest, greatest.
So, okay, so Bill's in charge of the show now.
Uh-oh.
Because I'm sick, and my computer is apparently sick, too. So chat with Bruce while I sort out what we're going to do with
Bruce, are you in there?
I believe I am.
How you doing today?
Fine, thank you so very much.
Good deal.
I just talked to Chuck, and...
And he wants to know why I'm not calling him on Skype.
Yeah, is there another way to adjust the computers? Can you go into his Skype
and
can work that way? You reversal change on the message.
I got a plan B coming.
Yeah, okay. That's what I'm asking. What we're going to be talking about today is the larger transformational policy of the administration and how President Trump is the commander-in-chief and has basically changed the whole direction of the U.S. government's foreign policy.
I'm glad you said that, because I think somewhere along the line, people have forgotten he is the commander-in-chief. He's the boss. So you got to kind of do what he says.
Commander-in-chief is different in scope than as you look at the president. In our country, we have him both, you know. So, and as you look at him as the commander-in-chief, he's done historical movement to change, like I was saying earlier, the transformation of the foreign policy. And it's been nothing but good things. And in 30 years, they haven't really made substantial moves to work on what we call the four branches of foreign policy. That's economic, that's the military, that's diplomatic, and it's intelligence. It's all been changed around. Gina Haspel has been coming on board. Mike Pompeo moved from the CIA to head of state.
We can hear you.
General Mattis has done a tremendous job.
Hey, Chuck.
Mike Pompeo at state is traveling everywhere now. North Korea, Mexico, you know, doing with the caravan. He's, you know, helping out with finding out the resolution on the Turkish killing. So there's a lot of things that are happening that are front and center, but the administration has its hands on it. It doesn't push it away and use a back door. So I want to talk a bit about the back door later, and we're talking about the FISA warrants. But
as we're looking
As we're looking, is Chuck on?
He is. Okay. He is on there.
Yes, we're on now.
Cool. Oh. Can you actually, before we go further with information, can everybody actually hear each other? Because we can hear you guys, but can you hear each other?
I can hear you.
Chuck, can you hear me?
Uh-oh. I don't hear anything from Bruce.
Okay, so we are independent.
Bruce, you there?
Which is why we did it this way, because last time you couldn't hear you either.
This is a very important discussion.
Well, you can just be the referee and say, okay, you go.
All right, maybe we'll call you on the Skype from the studio, see what happens there when we have a break here in a couple minutes.
Okay, sounds good. As you know, Chuck and I have teamed up before. And we're working on the border security. This goes back to 2005, 2006 with Senator Frist, Bill Wickerman, Candy Harder.
Must be a Chicago thing.
The National Secure Offense Act that President Trump is using today to build the border wall. So we saw the problems that existed back then. And I believe the Bear Stearns report had indicated at that time there were 20 million, immigrants, aliens in the country. The current report is saying there's 30 million. So it has escalated, and at the time we thought it was outrageous, and now if you look at the figures coming in, it seems to be way out of hand. And now we're looking at how to handle the border, but the Congress has to act, and they have to fill in the gaps for where border security needs to, implement and deploy and increase their capacity to secure our borders. I'm saying those three things. Implement, that means what are they going to be tasked to do, deploy, how many more border security agents do we need, and go forward on that. What's a strategic plan that needs to be done through Congress to make sure that happens?
Right, right.
Okay, so that's what I was talking about there. But I want to get back to where we were first talking about, and that's the importance of President Trump as commander-in-chief. And that's not highly represented in the media and how excellent and forthcoming he was to keep his word on being the head of the national security for the United States and protecting our country. And Chuck will weigh in now. So.
Well, we're going to take a really quick break, and then we're going to find Chuck because we're trying to connect him through a different Skype. You know, it doesn't matter really how well we plan this. It's kind of funny, you have it all planned and my computer won't come up, then it does, but then we can't hear Chuck and
pencil and paper, that's what I say.
We all have to be in the same room so we can talk to each other. Alrighty, we're going to be back with our actual guests, Chuck Floyd, Bruce Moran. We're going to be talking about national security. I think you'll like it. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
The boys are here again. The boys are back in town.
one of them. It's supposed to be boys. Okay, so Bruce, can you be both boys that are back in town until we find Chuck again? Because last time I was going to play that song, we had this exact same problem. I think it's the song.
Very good. I
think it's the song. I've decided.
I want to get very serious here because the Mariners are coming up ahead, and as you see, the media is just running wild on all kinds of different things, and they're not really covering the effectiveness of President Trump. They're basically trying to deny him his presidency. We saw, you know, various things come out in the New York Times. Woolworth put out a book, and then we saw other things coming about his competency. If you look at what he's done, he's far removed from that, and he's shown direction, purpose, and keeping his word to the people of the United States of America as an elected official. That's completely different than what's being presented in the media. And I'm beside myself that we have to talk about all these things, but they're all part and parcel to his greater effectiveness and how he's running his administration. And considering all he's up against and he's always being attacked, he's done a tremendous job. I mean, just above and beyond what a normal president would do in this year and three quarters period.
Well, it makes you wonder what he could have got done if they'd left him alone and just not necessarily go along with everything he wants, but just quit riding him on all this phony stuff. He could have got even more done. I really believe that.
Well, they obstructed putting people in the office with him, too. Remember that.
Right.
So Chuck and I gripe about that. There's about 500 people that need to be put into office now, aside from the judges. As you saw what happened with Kavanaugh, that was a travesty in and of itself, and a real slugfest, you know, between the Democrats and, you know, Lindsey Graham stepped up there and, you know, really, you know, laid it out straight on what was going on. So, and then, you know, Brett stated it right at the beginning of his testimony the second time, what the word was, you know, how it was going down and how it was destroying his family. This is unbecoming, you know, of a Senate hearing. It's supposed to be a hearing, on becoming a Supreme Court justice, and it became a trial. And that's, you know, what the president was talking about and several of the our senators, Grassley was talking about. You're innocent until proven guilty, and they were using it on the opposite end of the spectrum. So that would be more in line with you would see something like that happen during a revolutionary period during France when they were, you know, with Marie Antoinette and that whole, they just threw out the law and just started executing people and bringing people to trial without cause. And that's what we're not about. We're about rule of law. We're about everybody having the right to defend themselves, everybody being properly represented, and not everybody ganging up on you and destroying you in a media-fabricated environment, hyperbolic, as we would say. Or what they, you can also look at it as a way they're looking at it as moral suasion, and they're taking a way in which they feel comfortable and just taking people down according to what they feel is right.
Well, you know, another thing that I saw that came out of this was I was really kind of surprised at how many people don't really understand what the Supreme Court does. I just hear a lot of people saying, you know, they're going to make all these laws now. Well, that's not what they do. And maybe you could talk a little bit about that. What the role of the Supreme Court is and why it's important to have a country with the rule of law.
Well, the founding fathers at the beginning decided they wanted to move away from the king.
Right.
And they established the Declaration of Independence and then the Constitution subsequently. The Constitution in and of itself is the guiding hand. And you have three separate branches of government. It's the Supreme Court, as we know, and the House and Senate, and then you have the executive branch, which is the presidency. Each of these has their own powers, and the power of the Supreme Court is to not create laws, creating laws, like we were talking about earlier, the House and the Senate have to create new laws for border security, for immigration, for naturalization. You know, that has to be created. Mm-hmm. The Supreme Court just interprets the Constitution as written, as law.
Right. So they determine whether or not the law that they're trying to implement is just, is along with what the Constitution.
We take precedent because we have various laws in each of our districts, and you know, each of our federal districts has an appellate court, and they move them up to the Supreme Court, and then they have the court in Washington D.C., which is another adjunct, which was what Brett was at. And these courts all are helping understand the law, a rule of law, according to precedent. So you have case upon case, which is different than other, say, bylaws, which would be instituted in France. We have a rule of law that helps us define case by case and precedent in order to make an assessment, a pretty good assessment on how we're going to go forward in governing our people. Most countries need to establish this protocol and the standard for a constitution. The constitution is what the Supreme Court is interpreting, and that's the important part. Does that make sense, or do you need...
No, that's perfect. I'm just really surprised at how many people think the Supreme Court is actually making laws.
And no, it's just
they don't make simple laws.
Yeah, they're basically an independent group of judges that are the highest in the land, and then you have the courts under them, each in a federal district, and then you have the U.S. attorneys there. Mm-hmm. And they're helping, you know, prosecute and interpret the laws there. Then when you have something that's seemingly different and you have a cause to bring it up to the Supreme Court, then you have it travel up the system. You know, you have appeals.
Mm-hmm.
After you go to the, you know, appellate court, the appeal system, then it gets heard by the Supreme Court if there's merit on it. Then once it reaches the Supreme Court, they tell you if it has merit on certain parts of the law. Say you have an argument before the Supreme Court. Maybe you have 5 or 6 points. Maybe 2 of them they couldn't hear, and the other 4 they can't because it doesn't abide by what they want to do as Supreme Court justices, to be fair, understand it as part of the Constitution. A lot of it could be something that's not part of the Constitution, and it doesn't set precedent. You have to have something that will set precedent or the law, so they can make a ruling on it and, you know, go forward with it. So
good.
This is Chuck finally here.
Okay.
On the Supreme Court, you know, you have 9 judges, and each year there are numerous cases that are brought up that they look at, and then all 9 of them vote on what they want to hear that year. And so if it's something that doesn't get a 5-4 vote, they don't hear it, and then the circuit courts, whatever decision they make, stays. And so, this is one thing that, Senator McConnell has done very, very well over the last 2 years, is get more circuit court judges in than any time in history. They've gotten 24 there. You know, they've gotten Neil Gorsuch, Brett Kavanaugh in the Supreme Court. And, you know, they have all kinds of programs that they're pushing out, in order to help, the police and also the other courts in across the U.S. And so, you know, the Supreme Court is the arbiter of disputes, but they select what cases they want to hear each year.
How many cases do they typically hear in a year, do you know?
It's about a dozen.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so they're very selective, and again, it's good that we now have 5-4 conservatives versus liberal judges on the court, because if it was the reverse, you wouldn't hear many cases that contribute to the flag, to veterans, or to health care and all these other issues that they are very proactive on and very progressive on. And so, again, many of us, you know, really salute the president for nominating these conservative judges so they interpret the law as written and they don't make up new law. That's the key.
Right.
Yeah. So with this particular mix, making up law is probably not going to be one of the options, which is correct. Why it's which is why they're all mad.
Yes, yep. Absolutely.
You can't make that's how anymore,
you know, and Brett Kavanaugh was in the 12th, which is the D.C. circuit. The most liberal circuit is where you guys live in California. It's the ninth circuit. Mm-hmm. And so there are two judges up for nomination right now. And President Trump has stood his ground and will not let the two senators from California blue slip his nominations. And so in the past, if somebody blue slipped them, then they didn't get nominated. But, you know, Trump has said, hey, I'm not going to go by that. We're going to get our nominations in there and we're going to change how the Ninth Circuit looks, which is very, very good.
And so for people who don't know, explain the blue slip process.
Okay. The senators from each state, if an individual is nominated from a state, California, Florida, wherever it is, then the senators from those states can put a blue slip in and block the nomination of that individual because they are given priority rights as far as who they think should be on the court from their state. And so this is something that President Bush and many others in the past just did not violate. But I'm glad that now President Trump and also now Senator McConnell sees how things go in the Senate and what they did to Judge Kavanaugh. And so they're changing the rules, which is about time that happens.
And so the blue slip process is going to change?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, okay. Trump has already told them, and McConnell has already told the two senators from California. They worked with them for probably 6 months trying to get an agreement on how to work with them, and they refused to work with the Trump administration and with Senator McConnell. And so they said, hey, you're not going to work with us. We're not going to work with you. The blue slip is gone. Forget about it. We're doing our nominations.
It's funny. There's an old expression out here. It comes up a lot during the water you know, when we have all these water wars. Meetings and, you know, the water wars. And they always say, you know, if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. So apparently they're on the menu. Bummer. All right. We'll be right back. We've got to take a really quick break. You're listening to We the People. Join us online. WeThePeopleRadio.us. About the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. One look from you, I drift. That would be the song that the Trump administration wishes that Feinstein and Harris would sing, but they don't.
No.
It's such a letdown.
you know, one of the items I like to bring up because of the topic we just talked about the courts. President Trump has had 290 accomplishments over the last 19 months, even though he's been investigated and blocked by Republicans and Democrats, whatever. But one of the key items he would have more than that is in border security, where the liberal judges in the Ninth Circuit blocked his executive orders on immigration and letting people into the country. And so they were in Hawaii, California, and Washington State. And so that's an example of the liberal activism that the court has been doing over the last 20 and 30 years, and that's why the Democrats are so upset about Kavanaugh being on the Supreme Court.
Right. It's going to overthrow some of that.
Well, just pull it back in line. I mean, some of these decisions have been bizarre, to say the least, and just not good for the country and not in keeping with our laws.
Well, yeah, one of the things Jeff Sessions was addressing, and this gets back to our point on national security, are sanctuary cities, areas of where we have people that are illegal aliens or immigrants, however you want to look at it, are committing crimes.
Those are undocumented Americans.
I mean,
there's always that.
Well, we have MS-13, the committing heinous crimes. We have the drug cartels dividing our cities up into areas. The DEA had shown that there's some, I don't know, $320 billion a year to $700 billion a year being used in the illicit drug trafficking industry. Tons of stuff is coming across the border in liquid meth that the DEA and the Border Security are finding. So it's out of hand and out of control, and law and order needs to be restored. And that's basically what the Attorney General does for national security, to protect our borders. And these things are part and parcel to the entire program that President Trump is instituting through his commander-in-chief, because he's also talking about possibly sending the military down to the borders, which was done, you know, in the 1900s and before we had border security. And that was a problem, because Mike Pompeo went over to Mexico to talk to them, and they had, subsequent to that time, sent up police and their security people to, you know, help out and prevent this caravan from coming through. But they've broken through, about 1,000 or two stay, but you don't know how many are getting through. The ones who are doing illicit activity are going to come through other means, like there's a river there. They come down the river and bypass the border security Mexico has on the bridge. You know, there's a lot of ways to circumvent what's in place. So they tore down the fence, as you saw, on the, you know, Ingram showed it, Hannity showing it, Carlson showed it. I mean, they're all showing what's going on, but they're not helping delineate what the larger problem was with President Trump was doing. And just to get it to stop, and Mexico to intervene. Mexico hasn't been a true partner in this for, Chuck and I have been working on it for 14 years, and it's never been found a sound resolution.
Well, I was a little bit surprised that after Pompeo went down there, I was under the impression that Mexico was going to try to stop these folks from making the trek, and then all of a sudden the fence comes down and they can't contain them, and now they're marching through their country. Well, it doesn't sound like Mexico's...
With the UN, they did put up some things there to help them, but they're coming across. What we had talked about earlier was that they have to register at the U.S. consulate or at the U.S. embassy in their respective countries that they want to seek asylum or come through, you know.
Right.
And they're supposed to do that in Mexico, too. And what they're doing is circumventing both of those systems. And now we're met with and fraught with this problem. And that's why President Trump was considering and may have to institute sending the military down to the border, which is, you know, that's not what we really want to do.
No.
Well, you know, the military is not going to solve the issue. So we need to be real about that, because right now you have thousands of illegals crossing the border every day, and the Border Patrol is catching them because they're turning themselves in. They have so many people in detention right now that they are releasing them into the U.S. And so I'm going to write an email to the Trump administration tonight and say, when you get these individuals in, families and in single individuals or whatever, what you do is you record them, turn them back into Mexico, and tell them when their court date is available, they will be notified. Because right now, they will do catch and release. They give them a court date, and they never show up.
Right.
And so I'm going to suggest to the president, that the Border Patrol return them to Mexico after they record them and say, give me your cell phone, give me a way to contact you, and we'll tell you when your court date is, and we will make sure you get tape, you go to your court, because at least 85 to 90% of the people that go to court are found illegitimate in their claim of asylum.
Well, the I think the problem there is Mexico doesn't want them either. So if we release them back into Mexico, I think Mexico's not going to be on board with that, are they?
Well, it doesn't make any difference. They're walking through their country, so,
right.
You know, heck with it. To return them back to Mexico and say, okay, there's the border. Go across. We'll call you when you have a court date. And right. I guarantee you they'll go back home. They'll never show up.
Right. Yeah, because Mexico's not going
to
support
them. Why do we have to keep them in our country?
We don't.
We don't.
I mean,
that's like the myth, huh?
We don't have to. It should be a revolving door. When they get recorded, they go right back into Mexico, and we tell them we will call them when their time comes to go to court, and I guarantee you they'll never show up.
Right. Until they're caught again crossing illegally.
Until they're caught again.
Yeah.
Well, they come across in jet skis. They're doing all kinds of things. I mean, they're... For the drug cartels, they're using mini submarines to bring the illicit drugs through. So you got a whole slew of things that border security is busy with. It's just not the people itself. It's the cartels and the child trafficking and the abuse. It's done. 80% of a lot of the women coming from these three countries are being raped.
Right.
So, I mean, that's one of the things that it's not being directly addressed is that the abuse is occurring through Mexico, and you don't know what's happening to these women. And they're not, you know, if you're talking about post-traumatic stress and through a travel in and of itself and then having to deal with the rape situation, then these women are not mentally geared to be helped right away. They need medical care. They need to be comforted. They need the proper psychological help. You know, if you're just throwing them into the United States, and what happens to them? I mean, we have a big movement now, as you see, that they're talking about women abuse, but all these women coming across the border abuse, what's happening to them? They're not getting the proper care.
Right.
I mean...
Well, the Democrats don't really care about the women getting abused coming across the border. You know, it's all a political item to them. And so... You know, they talk out of one side of their mouth and out of the other. So, you know, what is it? You know, so they got to come to realization on what do you do to help protect women and children? You stop.
And the child trafficking, too.
You got to build the wall.
Right.
The wall will keep a lot of people out where they can only come through the ports of entry, and that's it.
Well, they're talking now, you know, too, about the timing on this whole caravan thing is quite suspicious. That it's, you know, right before the midterms, they're gonna be showing up at the border, you know, right at the midterms. So I mean, it's political.
I'm sure George Soros or Tom Sayers is paying for this thing, and it's all very suspicious. But again, you look at the different agencies that are involved. It's not only CBP and ICE and DHS. You have Health and Human Services. Secretary Alex Azar has spent tons of time, money, and everything else trying to sort out who's who. These people come in with kids, and they're not their own kids. They just get into the country. And the president of El Salvador said they found over 100 ISIS members in the group that was going north. And so... Again, the Democrats are not concerned about security. They're only concerned about votes and watering down the American conservative voter. That's all they're worried about, and that's all they want to do.
Which is just sad. Absolutely. For some reason, it keeps playing, you know. Yeah. Seems to keep playing well. And I don't understand when we gave up on, you know, law and order. And why we would do that? How do they figure it's going to work for them if eventually the rest of it all goes down the drain?
Well, law and order's been given up.
Look at California. Look at the crime there. Look at Chicago. You look at all these major cities, and these gangs have taken control.
Sure.
And so, you know, again, President Trump has got to get his political appointees in. There are over 33,000, almost 4,000 people that he could hire to help him in the different agencies across the government. And they have not focused on it because right now you still have a lot of different Trumpers. You still got a lot of Obama people in there. And it's got to be a priority of the White House to put the not only the PAS that get voted on by the Senate, the PAs and the Schedule Cs, they've got to get them into the agencies to throw out all these items that all these Obama people are still doing. And he needs people in there that will promote what he wants to do and his message and his goals.
That makes a lot of sense. And I think people are seeing that at this point. Sad, it's almost 2 years in.
I know.
We've got to take a really quick break, and then we're going to come back with our guests, Chuck Floyd and Bruce Moran. They are with Security Solutions Technology. And you're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Side, so go back and wait there. I like that plan.
Until we call your number.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like a deli.
Yeah.
We moved a step back because we were talking about foreign policy, and of course this caravan thing is just ridiculous in so many different ways. We were trying to cover President Trump's position as commander-in-chief. And what he's done in, Syria, Iraq, with the Christian genocide, stopping ISIS in Iraq. I mean, these are instrumental foreign policy programs that have been done that help change and transform our policy over the last 30 years. So I think it's important that we emphasize that and start talking about that.
Okay.
No, I agree.
Bill and I will be here quietly listening.
Yeah. No, his foreign policy has it's been an about face to what we've been looking at 2 years prior, and I think North Korea. I mean, we were on the brink with North Korea, and
Of course, I mean, all you got from the left was that he's going to start a nuclear war and we're all going to die, and then we all didn't die and they stopped talking about it.
Yeah. Oh, he didn't know what he was talking about.
Well, then he had the first summit with him, and then Kim was meeting with the Moon from South Korea for One Korea. So there's been a larger transformation in how President Trump and Mike Pompeo has been effective. Also, we can't forget Ambassador Haley weighed in, too, and she was very stern on her positions, too, supporting Mattis when he was doing his maneuvers there by North Korea. So it was a complete effort by the Trump administration with President Trump as commander-in-chief, demonstrating that you can come to conclusions on denuclearization if you put your foot down. And with the sanctions, with our maneuvers, with our strong words and our ability to demonstrate through military capability that they're not even in the same ballpark. When we demonstrated in Syria with 105 cruise missiles and then the Mohab bomb in Afghanistan, it showed them that they don't have a leg to stand on, and it's better to work with the President of the United States, who has this military force behind him, and your capabilities are not even on the same page, and you need to come to the table and talk about it. And it brought a formative summit, and they're going to have a second summit, as Mike Pompeo just met like a week and a half ago with them, and that should probably be coming up in October after the election.
And that was a really big deal. I mean, to have talks with North Korea, never been done, and yet he wasn't given credit for that either. So
that is absolutely the fact.
Yeah,
look at what he did for the Middle East and knocking out ISIS. And we were working on Chuck was working with me on a Christian genocide. Along with the Yazidi, Shabbats, and Turkmen being persecuted there in northern Iraq. And they were, crucifixions, roasting people alive, raping the kids, using them as sex slaves. All this was going on. And President Trump put his foot down and said, no way, Jose. We're going to go in there and we're going to take care of business. And sure enough, it was done. So this is nothing he's fooling around with, and they're taking it lightly that his effectiveness has been really a transformational change for the United States government and foreign policy. It's a dramatic change, and they just don't want to acknowledge it.
Well, I think as far as the foreign leaders are concerned, I think they're all realizing that when he says he's going to do something, he's going to do it. And I think it's had a really profound impact on their behavior. I mean, with the UN, with Syria, with all these folks,
and I think Nikki Haley was a great pick.
Oh, Nikki Haley was, yeah, she was.
I think people liked her before, for the most part. I think people thought, she was a pretty straight shooter, but boy, she did a very nice job in that role. You guys have any clues on who we're going to get next?
I prefer to stay on the topics of accomplishments. Because that can take 15 minutes.
I just thought we could lure you in with a quick answer.
Many people didn't even know who Nikki Haley was when she was governor of South Carolina.
That's true.
And then, Trump picked her, and everybody goes, why did he pick her? Well, she was very outspoken. She didn't like Trump from the start, but then she got to know him, and she did. And so he put her up there. And, she just blossomed. She's been a star. And she's been a very, very conservative individual in telling the UN how it is and really focusing in on President Trump's message and goals of what the UN should be doing and telling them that, hey, you're not correct. You look at, who's on human rights committees and all these other things. I mean, it's just been unbelievable. So, who President Trump will pick, I think there are like five people that are on the short list, but, I really don't, have a preference.
After the Kavanaugh thing, I bet people are like, "Oh, don't pick me! Don't pick me!"
That's true, because you got to go in front of the Senate for confirmation.
God, got to get got to move your kids to another state and put Kevlar on the outside of your house and
can't go out to the restaurants.
No,
or anything to eat.
No, you've got to wear a helmet every day. Yeah. It's just crazy.
Cavalier vest.
Exactly.
This is the people at the restaurants is starting to get old. And so, Mitch McConnell was out this weekend in the Washington, D.C. area.
I read that.
And a heckler, started attacking him and whatever. And the people in the restaurant, said, hey, get out of here. We don't want to hear that. Leave him alone. And so a lot of people have had enough of the Democrat strategy of, just attacking people.
Well, by and large, the people in our country don't go for that stuff. I mean, that's not the bulk of Americans. People don't want to be rude and horrible and, attack people. And especially, with all the, the Antifa guys, burning things down and breaking things. It's like, wait a second. You don't get to burn our town down just because you're upset. I think people are going to start fighting back. I think they've had enough.
Well, President Trump has been fighting back the whole time, and I'd like to get us back to what he said at the U.N. I think that's a very important thing, because he was talking about our national sovereignty needs to be protected.
Yes.
And that means he's against the anti-globalism multinational authorities. That's what he talked about. And he was talking about you can't be screwing around U.N. anymore with the United States. That's what he's saying. Those are people who are unelected officials, and they're trying to dictate what the United States should do. He also states that nations pay for their own defense, and nations look out for their own interest. which gets us back to the FISA court thing, which I want to talk about later. But when he's at the, he was absolutely perfect in trying to outline his program to the UN, and because it's totally different than their globalist point of view. And some of them were snickering, and he understood that, and he said, we need our national sovereignty. You need to respect our national sovereignty, and our national sovereignty is our Constitution. And if you can't understand that, we're going to maintain a position like we always do, and it hasn't been maintained for over 30 years. We're going to respect ourselves, respect our nation, respect our people, and go forward and do the kind of programs that support the world and the United States as a leader. And that hasn't been done.
Isn't it odd that that's controversial?
That's very odd that it's controversial. I'm ticked off that it's not being covered correctly. That's what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
This has to be first and foremost, and that President Trump is actually doing what the earlier presidents did 30, 40 years ago before we went into the Cold War, and then we entered the Cold War. This is what was done. These kind of words were said. Now, if you're saying these words now, today, you're not right. You're not politically correct.
Yeah, you're a hater.
But you're a hater. You're.
It's interesting, though.
I don't want to go into the words they use to describe Republicans or people that don't agree with them, because it's basically a manipulation of the rhetoric to draw people into a emotional base. And what I'm trying to convey here, the emotional base is not what we're trying to do. We're trying to help every U.S. citizen be protected in their home, in their lifestyle, and what they want to do, how they want to raise their kids, and protect their families, law and order. That's all that President Trump is saying. He's getting real down to the basics, and we've gotten away from the very basics of how our country has succeeded economically. And the economic freedom is what he's instituted with NATO. He says, you pay your share, we'll pay our share. You haven't been paying your fair share for years.
Again, who would think that would be controversial?
Right,
yeah,
right.
And the United Nations. We support the United Nations. We usually flip the bill for the United Nations, a larger percentage of it.
Which was nice of us, but doesn't work anymore. We've got to take a really quick break for the news.
He's looking at it from strictly a business point of view.
Exactly.
You're a partner, I'm a partner.
All right,
people, we'll sit down, we'll get fair trade done, we'll look at what's fair and what's equitable. We don't want our intellectual property rights just being given away to China and them manipulating our companies when they're coming in there.
Let's hit on that. We'll hit on that after the break.
We'll start that on the next hour, okay? We'll be right back with Bruce Moran, Chuck Floyd, Security Solutions Technology. You're listening to We the People. Good afternoon, and welcome back to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour is Team Power. Team Power is our local John Deere Kubota tractor dealership, and they are at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. I got some music playing there.
There's
I don't
some
know
kind of scary music,
yeah.
Actually.
I don't know where that came from.
Like
anyway,
ghostly music.
Yeah, Team Power, and you can reach them on the web at
RedingTractors.com.
That music's throwing me off. I'm being haunted.
I know. It's like,
Yeah, so, go by and see them if you have any tractor needs or anything like that. Give them a call at 226-9226.
Bingo. So you can find everything about our show. You can go back to the archives that go back 8 years, believe it or not, October of 2010. October is always our witching hour. So I go back to October of 2010 and listen to all sorts of stuff. We have it all on there commercial-free for you, and there's no charge to listen.
Yeah.
That, I guess, is really popular to do now is charge your listeners to listen to your archives. It's like, ouch.
Yeah, it's only $0.02 a day.
That's
come
not
by and
very
listen. Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead and listen for free. What do we know? All righty. So
we're a lot.
Back with our guests, Bruce Moran and Chuck Floyd. Let's see. Let me go back to the top of my page here. Okay, boys, I've lost my place now. Now, Bruce the Fun Killer is going to have to get us back on track. But we have Bruce Moran, who's the National Security Advisor, and Chuck Floyd, the Chief Executive Officer for Security Solutions Technologies.
And we left off at President Trump at the UN talking about our national sovereignty.
See, I knew the Fun Killer could save us.
Being honored and respected from, as we can look at the United Nations, the World Trade Organization, and those other groups of people who are more geared towards the precautionary principle of harmonization. They're globalists and they have their own agenda, which supersedes the United States and its constitution. You know, so President Trump knows this, and that's why he made that statement. You know, I honor every nation to pursue its own nation's beliefs and traditions. The United States will not tell you how to live, work, or worship. We only ask you to honor our sovereignty in return. He was very adamant about that. That's a very deep statement he made, and to me, that's the epitome of this whole platform of he's going to represent America, he's going to represent our sovereignty, he's going to represent our traditions and our values and what we stand for as a country. It hasn't been done in that manner before, like I said, in foreign policy for 30, 40 years, but that goes back to, you know, the beginning of the Cold War. You know, we're talking about the 40s and 50s, things of that sort. Let's have Chuck weigh in because he can talk about things he knows that's going on in Washington regarding this. So.
Well, you know, I think President Trump has brought the Make America Great Again and Give Jobs to Americans back again. You look at the amount of manufacturing jobs, the low unemployment. You look at everything that he has done for our economy, and you know the presidents in the past just have not done that because they did not understand business. President Trump is a business person. He knows how to go negotiate. He knows what needs to be done. Again, he's been saying this stuff for 30 years. I remember, you know, meeting President Trump in Atlantic City back in the 90s when I would go to an RNC event. He would be there. And so he's been saying a lot of these things for a long, long time. And now he's able to be the chief executive of our country and put these practices into work so that the American economy and the American individuals and workers can benefit from his knowledge and from what he's been able to do. You know, we're not worried about what's going on in different parts of the world as far as their economies and whatever. If the United States economy is humming, the rest of the world hums.
No, that's absolutely right. What the U.S. does, the world will follow.
And obviously what he's doing is working because the job numbers have never been this good.
Yes. Now, one of the key items that John Bolton and others, you know, OMB and others are really looking at is the IP issue and the cybersecurity issues from China. China has been stealing our intellectual property for 20 years. You can't even go to China as a manufacturer or business unless you have a partner and they hack and they get everything that you have. And so that's why I think it's very important that recently President Trump said, hey, we're going to be on the offensive on cybersecurity. We're going to hack you. You hack us. We're going to come after you and close your manufacturing and steal your secrets and steal your people's personal information. You know, all of us at OPM, who have records at OPM, Office of Management, you know, and all of our records have been stolen by the Chinese and the Russians over and over again. And so this is a key area that the president has really looked at and has focused on, and cybersecurity is going to be a really big issue in the future, and we're going to go after them like they've been after us. But the IP issue has got to be solved, and if the Chinese will not honor our IP, then we need to stop dealing with them.
Right. And Russia, too, on that front, is the same thing. I mean, they're meddling in a lot of things that we know they're meddling, and I think they need to stop that activity as well.
Well, you know, the little meddling that they do, you know, trying to influence our elections and this and that, whatever. I mean, we do the same thing. I mean,
yeah,
look at the CIA and what the State Department does. You look at what Obama did. You know, he funded a company to challenge and go after Netanyahu in Israel. And so, we do it all the time. They do it to us. We do it to them. It's part of the game. And so the Democrats have made a really big issue out of it, which it really isn't a big issue for the Republicans, but it's a huge issue for Hillary Clinton and the Democrats because they got caught with their hand in the cookie jar, and they have been done everything they can to turn it around on President Trump, and they're not able to.
Bottom line, though, if they can't flip the House or the Senate or both in the midterm, this stuff will keep coming out. They have no hope of stopping it, and I think that's why they're probably freaking out as bad as they are.
Oh, absolutely. You know, if once Mueller, once he stops his investigation, I mean, I don't know what Jeff Sessions is doing, but, you know, if I was in charge of DOJ, I would have prosecutors, internal prosecutors, and other analysts and investigators looking at Fusion, looking at Hillary Clinton's emails, looking at everything that goes on. The DNC wouldn't even let the FBI look at their servers when they got hacked. Only CrowdStrike was allowed in there, and, you know, part of their investigation was bogus. And so, you know, the Democrats are hiding everything. And then, you know, why would the FBI and the Justice Department give Cheryl Mills and all of Clinton's handlers and workers that work, you know, top aides that work for her, immunity and destroy all of their devices? Why was that?
Right. Yeah, highly suspicious activity. And because of the, I mean, if you want to talk about collusion, it was in the Justice Department with the Hillary campaign. And I think as more and more of that information comes out, I think people are going to be really upset to know that their government was illegally spying on U.S. citizens with the help of the DNC and the Justice Department and God knows
and
how many other government agencies. I mean, that was a really big deal. And I just don't think they're going to be able to hide it for much longer. It's too much of it is leaking out now and leading to other things. And I don't know. I don't know if there'll ever be any prosecutions, which there should be, but at least the story is coming out, and people can make their own choice as to who the bad players were in this whole thing.
Well, we've got to take a really quick break, though. Hold on, Bruce. We got to take a really quick break, and so the Untouchables will take us to the little break here for 2 minutes. We'll be right back here listening to We the People.
So cloak and dagger, I'm feeling nervous, but I'm really kind of wishing for an undercover mission. That's when the red alert came on the radio, and I put my earpiece on, got my dark sunglasses on, and I had my weapon drawn. So I get my handcuffs, my cyanide pills, my classified dossier, cramming the phones like yeah, shredding the files like yeah, and then my rhinestone.
the CIA.
I never get tired of that song.
I know you don't. You love that song.
We heard the real version of it when we were in Disney World. It was the actual song. And we were on this little boat. It's like, hey, they're playing our song. Like some stupid thing that said party in the USA. I'm like, that song's not even funny.
Well, you know, that song plays right into what we've been talking about, because Brendan at the CIA was instrumental in getting the UK and Australia ambassadors and diplomats involved in this conspiracy by targeting some of the Trump folks, and all that kind of spiraled. And then the CIA and the FBI, I mean, Brennan and several others in the Obama administration were key in starting this whole thing. They organized it, they planned it, and they implemented it.
Yeah, and that's kind of spooky when you have your own government.
No pun intended.
Yeah. Your own government heading up covert operations against Americans, or even the election of an American.
Well, they spied on the Senate. I mean, it just goes on and on and on.
They're just out of hand.
Let me clarify the point so that our listeners know. They were spying on President Trump, his administration, and they didn't like him in office. Let's keep it very simple. And they used the MI6 agent, Christopher Steele, to do it. Who is he using? At Orbis. He's working for Orbis. That was his company. They don't mention Orbis at all. It should be also brought to the attention. Where did Orbis's monies come from? Was that a front for MI6 at some point? Did the DNC ever use Orbis at all, aside from this last election? How was this part and parcel to the raw information that was given to Fusion GPS? That's the critical part here. And if it's what Chuck was talking about, we call Five Eyes and 14 Eyes. Those are our brothers and sisters in the intelligence community that are helping us with the terrorism, counterterrorism, but they're using it for a presidential election. How far have they gone beyond the scope of what they're supposed to
exactly.
do? Exactly. The national security big problem. That's what I'm talking about. This has to do with going back to how and when did this all come about. Where did this raw information come from Russia? It came from Russian agents. It came from Russian people who had contacts. That they had to come from MI6, where Christopher Steele was involved. So this is the critical part that's not being addressed, and that has to probably come under the guise of another look at from General Sessions, Attorney General.
Well, and a lot of that information was completely fabricated and not substantiated before they took it to FISA.
That's not my point. Where did the information come from? The raw data to put in there, who gave it to them, how did it get there, who handled it, mm-hmm. who changed it? You have to understand, this is clandestine operations. It goes through many hands, many people touch it, many people review it, but it's all plausible deniability.
Right.
And you're missing the point, Bill. And that has to be addressed.
The president was supposed to release the information and make it unclassified, but the UK and Australia said, we object to that. And so that's why he didn't release it, but he needs to release it so the American people see what was going on, because he knows, and everybody else behind the curtain, they know what happened. And so
we know what
the
happened.
American people need to know.
But it's just not for the FISA warrants. Here's what I'm saying. And the material that went into it is the raw data. How do they extrapolate the raw data? Where did it come from? And then you got to find out who gave the raw data in and who were the sources. That's what I'm talking about. You need to need the sources and how these people are giving the information to MI6 or to the person from Australia or from the person from England or the person from 14 Eyes.
Right.
That's what I'm talking about. It's much more sophisticated in terms of the investigative process to find out the origins of the raw data, not what's going on in Fusion GPS, but they got information there and they put it into the FISA warrant. But what other information did they do for unmasking of the other people, maybe on a transition team? in the Trump administration. Where did that information come from? That's what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. It goes beyond. It's a larger national security problem that needs to be addressed and resolved. And our partners and allies and our brothers and sisters in the clandestine activities need to be called on the rug, and then, you know, then they correct themselves and they go about their business.
Well, that's exactly right, because a lot of those people that were involved in that process are still there.
Well, they're also part of the work in counterterrorism they do with us, with Al-Qaeda and ISIS. So they're our friends, and then if they're involving themselves in our presidential election and spying on us and our people and our friends, you know, that's uncalled for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hey, Bruce, could you talk about how John McCain was involved with that company?
Yeah, it's Orbis. It's that's the backdoor to Fusion GPS. This is the clandestine operations at its best. That's what they do. It's great work, but not to interfere with the president of the United States, the president-elect, or the president's transition team. We're not even talking about what happened to Mike Flynn. We had written something up in there about Mike Flynn. You know, we probably should address that. We have enough time. Maybe we should talk. Mike Flynn was a Democrat. He was a general, and he supported President Trump's program. And he went with him on his, you know, campaign trail. And he was definitely not loved by the Obama administration and Brennan. So if you want to target somebody, who do you target? The head of your national security that's coming in with the new administration. National security.
Yeah. And Bruce, could you Michael talk Flynn. About yeah,
so
how
they went
Senator
after him right
John
away.
McCain was involved with Orbis?
Yeah, Bruce, he wants you to talk about how McCain was involved with Orbis. And for people who are listening, there's Orvis. That's a clothing manufacturer. That's ORV, like Victor IS. So John McCain was not making clothes secretly on the side. This is Orbis, ORB, like boy IS.
So what was that?
I've just exhausted all my information. So now you got to go on. Now you got to talk about it.
So what was McCain's connection in that? Why was he even involved in it?
Well, that's the number one question. Why was he handling information that was going into the dossier that was given to him by Sir Andrew Wood when they were at the Halifax Security Conference in November of 16? You know, this is terrible that this kind of activity is going on. You know, so... we don't know if Orbis was directly at the conference or they had representatives there at the Halifax conference. That was, you know, so, but Sir Andrew Wood was handling the information and from what countries did he give it to? What activities and corporations had it? What was the information given? How much was given to the media to go against Trump when he's running? You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
President of the United States. Was it a
John McCain pushed it when he got back.
Absolutely. Absolutely. He gave it to the FBI, but how did he handle it? What did he review? Who else did he give it to? You know, so that's what Chuck is saying. We have a lot of questions that are really instrumental questions in the investigative process for clandestine activity, or we call it tradecraft, that need to be answered.
Right.
And these things are not being addressed. And Nunes has done a great job, and... Tom Fitton has done a great job with Judicial Watch. They're doing the front end. The back end is Orbis. It's Christopher Steele. It's the raw information. This should not be done in the first place, and yet it was done. How was it done? Who's it done by? Who are the sources? How did they get it done? What were the different networks? Where was the black monies coming from? Who gave the black monies in? What countries was it from? See what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I can go on and on.
So the Bruce's point is that
Democrats,
Republicans, and many people in the intelligence community that were targeting President Trump because they did not want him to win because
exactly.
He would upset the normalcy of the apple cart in D.C. and the power.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If people would read what we wrote, it goes into greater detail of the importance of what is being said here and the larger strategic value that this should be addressed in national security that should never be done in the first place.
Right.
And how they attack President Trump. that's ridiculous, and that's unfounded, and that's, you know, they got to be called on the rug on this stuff.
Yeah.
We can't be using our 5E and 14 eyes, and people need to understand and educate themselves on this, that you have plausible deniability to spy on another country's citizens, but you can't do it yourself, so you hand it off to somebody. Mm-hmm. So it's a handoff.
The Democrats have gone after this because they wanted to have a reason why Hillary Clinton lost. But, you know, you look at the difference between what they've done to Trump and then what they are trying to do on the killing of this Saudi individual at the Saudi embassy in Turkey. It's, you know, just contradicts itself. It doesn't make sense. But it's where the Democrats really want to push what's going on and to their advantage.
One of my takes on this, and I don't know, you know, because we're looking at it from a clandestine point of view, if you look at the Saudi family itself, MBS is trying to change the whole dynamic of how they're relating to the Western culture and become part of it. And if there are some factions within them, as we know, Osama bin Laden was part of that faction that formed al-Qaeda in like 93, 94, from the Yemenic point of view, then we have a different take on it. But if we just say it's bad and he got killed in the Saudi embassy, it's taking it from a very simplistic point of view. If you see that MBS is trying to reform the country and there are people in that may want to depose him, this would be the perfect ploy to send somebody an airplane over and take a journalist and kill him.
Right.
So I don't know what happened and went down.
No, that is that's a theory.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I hear people talking from our clandestine services and from our people who served in capacity of the State Department as ambassadors, and they're coming with conclusions that are kind of superficial without looking at the dynamic of what's taking place and changing the Saudi-United States-Israeli relationship. That's a huge change.
That is a huge change. We've got to take
to diminish that, and they want that not to happen, that would be a good way to do it by covering superficially, superficially in the media. And that's what...
What? The media is covering things superficially? I, for one, am shocked.
All right, let's take a break.
But, you know, we might find out what they're doing in the clandestine services. Weird Al's going to explain that to us, and this is why they can't get to the bottom of stuff.
I've done a couple of crazy things that have almost gotten me dismissed. Like terminate some head of state who wasn't even on my list. Burn that microfilm, buddy, will you? I tell you why, but then I'd have to kill you. You need a quickie confession. We'll start a waterboarding session. No hurry on this South American dictator. I'll assassinate him later. That's when he walked right in my laser sight. And my silencer was on. And my silencer was on. And another target's gone. Yeah, we got our flag up all over the world. From Kazakhstan to Bombay. Paying the bribes like, yeah. Plugging the leaks like, yeah. Interrogating the scum of the earth. We'll break them by the break of day. Yeah. It's a party in the CIA. Yeah. It's a party in the CIA. Yeah. It's a party in the CIA. Need a country to stabilize. Stabilize. Look no further. We're your guide. We're your guide. We've got snazzy suits and ties, and a better dental plan than the FBI. Better put your hands up and get in the van, or else you'll get blown away. Staging a coup like it, brainwashing moles like it. We only torture the folks we don't like. You're probably gonna be okay. Yeah, yeah. It's a party in the CIA.
You're probably going to be okay.
You're probably going to be okay. After this, we're probably all not going to be okay, though.
You look at, you know, you saw that Kim's brother was assassinated, you know, in Malaysia.
Oh, yeah.
We had the poisoning of the...
the Russian...
Yeah, in not funny news.
Ex-Russian exactly. Informants.
Yeah, and his daughter, too, in England. And we also had a big problem in Benghazi, where we had 30 people's lives at stake. Four got killed. An ambassador, Chris Stevens, senior information officer, Sean Smith, and two of our CIA Navy SEAL operatives, Ty Woods and Glenn Doherty. And that never took precedence like this is taking precedence. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
Where you're looking at the moral suasion content or any of the manipulation of the media, which I'm calling shallow, then you have ulterior motives in trying to diminish things President Trump has done. That's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Now, if he's talking about the larger context of the Saudi relationship and the agreements that have been done, and that's for the first time, and he's also talking about if they don't conduct business with us, they're going to conduct it with the Russians and the Chinese. So what kind of influence do we want to have in this Middle East situation where ISIS is still there, greatly diminished, but you still have Al-Qaeda operations going on? We had the Taliban attack our commander in Kandahar just this week, and they killed the governor, the head of security, the chief of police. You know, so this is still going on. So President Trump is well aware of this, and he's trying to handle it the best he can. You know, and like I'm saying, Mike Flynn, in and of itself, is a travesty, because he would have changed the whole dimension of the national security from the get-go. He was sidelined within 2 weeks of being, you know, the national security advisor. That's horrendous. And I think President Trump is thinking the same, but he can't always talk about it that way.
Right.
One thing that President Trump has done is he's sided with our allies, where Obama sided with our enemies.
Yeah, pretty consistently.
Yes. So, we have about 20 minutes or so left. So, let's talk about the election.
Yes, please.
Okay.
You know, there's, you know, everybody's been saying, oh, it's going to be a big blue wave and this and that, whatever.
Wrong.
I don't think so. I think the American people see what's happening in Mexico with this caravan. They look at the economy. They look at the deregulations, they look at everything that's been so positive that President Trump has accomplished, even though the media is totally against him, Democrats, a lot of Republicans have been. His first 2 years have been a lot of turmoil. And so, you know, he's had a lot of people in and out of the White House that some should have been there, some shouldn't have been there. And so, you know, he's accomplished a heck of a lot in 2 years, more than I would say 90% of the presidents in the past. And so I think the American people are going to reward him. And you look at the rallies that he's doing, just like before when he was running for president. You're huge. You can't even get into them. And so you look at what he's saying out there and what people really are interested in. And I think the media and the Democrats are going to be sadly disappointed after this election, just like they were in 2016. And they're going to look at, well, we need another Russian collusion story.
Yeah. No, I think you're absolutely right, Chuck. Just look at the good things that have happened since he's taken office. And I think he still has that momentum. I just heard today that I think it was in Texas, he's going to do a rally, and they've already got 75,000 people that want to attend, and they were saying there's nobody in the political landscape on either side that can draw a crowd like that, and why is that happening?
Yeah, man, maybe it's 1% Joe Biden.
Yeah, exactly.
Dynamic Joe?
Yeah, you know, Ted Cruz is going to win, and so, you know, you look at Arizona, Walter McSally is going to win. You look at, you know, all the other northern states that are red, those guys will win. You know, we're going to pick up the Senate, and we will not lose the House.
Oh, I believe you're right.
It's really interesting because even up here in, you know, no man's land of Northern California, the Democratic Party paid for and sent people to a congressional – wasn't a debate because it was with the League of Women Voters. So it's like basically they ask them a question, they both answer. But there were people there that we didn't know, had no one had ever seen. They were standing out front talking about how they wouldn't have come if they weren't being paid. And so people asked them, what do you mean you got paid? Like, is this like part of your job or something? And they said, no, we're from Cupertino down in the Bay Area. And, the Democratic Party down there paid us to come and, like, heckle.
Can you explain that? Because we're talking to European, how far people are traveling.
You're looking at about...
About 180 miles.
Is this with traffic or without?
How many hours of travel would it
You're looking at a good solid 3.5 hours.
Yeah,
one way.
Manipulation is going on, and they're targeting certain congressional districts in the United States, and they're sending political operatives in.
Yeah. And a lot of people don't realize how big California is. If you were going to go from north to south, it's...
12 hours.
A 12-hour drive to cover the state. So for these
folks...
So
we're talking to our Ukrainian friends. What would you want to tell them? I mean,
it's like a 3.5-hour drive one way to go sit there and shout out and, you know...
And disrupt and, the
yeah, be disruptive
political
for
event.
An hour and a half. And someone was willing...
Tell our friends from European Ukraine about Antifa and those kind of protests. What's going on here?
Oh, well, do a little search on the computer under Google for Portland. The city in flames. Portland, Oregon seems to be the place where the police stand down all the time. I don't know what they think is going to happen.
What does that mean, the police stand down? To let them understand, because they got to understand what's going on.
Well, Portland, Oregon is a very very liberal city.
What are the police standing down to?
When the
people running around with masks, lighting things on fire, and attacking.
So they're not intervening, they're just letting them do it.
They're letting them go.
They're not actually being police.
They're letting them vent, you know, because they need to... You know, just get it out of their system.
It's a safe space.
Yeah.
So, you know, the mayor there has told the police, stand down, let the rioters do whatever they want to do, and don't enforce the law. And so that's all leadership and liberal politicians.
But the crazy part is, I mean, who's going to pay for all the rebuilding of infrastructure? What happens when people get killed?
Well, yeah, that and by allowing that to happen, you get your national news in there, and then they pump it up as a typical event in America over the displeasure of Donald Trump. This is what Americans are doing everywhere, and it's not.
The people in Europe need to hear this of what's actually going on here, and the people in Ukraine. Because they need to understand that paid political people going around and causing problems, and there's nobody doing anything to stop them.
Right.
No. And interesting that a political party would pay people to go and do that, especially, and they kind of forgot the,
It could be a larger donor, too, just not a political party.
Sure. But wouldn't you think that
so they know that it's just not maybe the Democrats. It could be a Democratic donor or somebody else, you know, that wants.
Sure. But don't you think one of the rules would be, and by the way, don't tell anybody. This will be like our little secret. Instead, they go running around telling everybody they got paid by the opposition.
And the opposition would be George Soros and
Tom Steyer, actually.
It's called black monies. And black monies can be funneled through 4 or 5 different levels of sources. Let them know this in Europe. And you're not able to trace it. Same thing as clandestine activities. That's why I want to make this perfectly clear.
Sure.
The monies are not being able to be traced because it's coming through 3 or 4 layers. And how it starts, you may never find out.
Right. Well, no, and it's and
money
that
Obama gave to the Iranians, you can't trace it.
And that's becoming more and more of the norm, which is really kind of disturbing.
If it's happening here, that's what I'm saying. It could be happening in Ukraine. It could be happening in Germany. It could be happening in France. So these kind of things, and they have the same kind of problems we have here, but it's different. They have more of a prevalent problem with the. You know, the refugees that are ISIS-related or terrorist-related extremists. So they need to deal with that in their own way, like President Trump was saying. We have our sovereignty. We're trying to deal in the best way we can. and they need to deal in the best way they can. But this information that we're talking about here is never discussed in this way.
Right.
I mean, the Europeans and Ukrainians need to understand this is a problem we all share alike. In Britain, too, you know, they're trying to resolve Brexit, and they're having protests in the street, and, you know, there's all kinds of things going on that are not really focused on and how this all comes about and who's funding it and where the monies are going and how it's not being addressed correctly so people are properly being represented as a sovereign nation.
Right.
Not as a globalist point of view. See what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some of the information you sent us was on Brexit and the European Union and how the European Union is able to influence American politics. And with Donald Trump being elected, it kind of turns them on their ear because he doesn't go along with a lot of what the European Union is trying to do. And
In terms of infringing on our sovereignty, nothing he'll ever
right.
accept like that.
The globalist team, he's not on the globalist team.
No, he's not.
So, boys, in my brief absence, did you take a break?
No, we did not take
a break.
No, you did
not.
Sorry.
Then we must do that now. I have returned just in time to be the fun killer.
Okay.
We'll be right back. You got to saddle up your boys. You got to draw a hard line. When the gun smoke settles, we'll sing a victory tune. And we'll all meet back at the local saloon. We'll raise up our glasses against evil forces, singing whiskey for my men, beer for my horses.
Yeah, it beats like a drum down in New Orleans, sings like a low-down melody, it dreams like California.
There you go. Thought we'd go out on an up note. So, fellas, we've got like 9 minutes. What do you want to plug in here in the last moments?
I want to thank President Trump for going out and to all these different states. No president ever done it like this before, and he's taking it upon himself to be the leader of our country.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm always amazed when he goes out on the road and stumps for all these different folks, the crowds. You just can't say his popularity is diminishing when those numbers show up to see him.
Every time.
Every time.
Yeah, it isn't like he hit a big city or
something. Yeah, it's like you can't book a big enough venue when he comes to town. Like he was in Fallon, Nevada, which is Fallon's just a little kind of a sleepy town out in the middle of the desert, and I think he drew like 35,000 or 40,000 people to that town, which is crazy. And
I mean, the only way they get that many is like Burning Man,
yeah,
or maybe the eclipse.
No, it's he's doing something right, and don't believe what you hear on the news. He's doing a wonderful job, and I just hope he keeps it up.
I like to thank Melania, you know, and she's done a job as the First Lady. Nikki Haley, our friends at the Heritage Foundation, you know, they've stepped up. I mean, they're working 24/7 too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a lot of people who are trying to support this larger effort. I didn't mention Mike Pompeo.
He's doing a great job.
Of course, Chief of Staff Kelly and our new national security advisor, John Bolton. I mean, now we have people that are stepping up to the plate, and it's hard. And
I can only
imagine.
Well, you know, we have to congratulate them on what they've been doing. It's like I said, it's been 30, 40 years since some of this foreign policy has been correctly and properly addressed.
True.
Like Chuck was saying, it's the business model. Either do it or you don't.
Yeah.
And if it's not a fair trade or a fair business deal, it doesn't get done, you know?
Yeah. So,
you know, recently I went to a speech where John Bolton spoke and talked about, you know, national security and foreign policy and that sort of thing. And Code Pink was there.
Oh, good.
And they had bullhorns and everything else. I mean, they pushed them out, put them outside, and you could still hear them. And they really disrupted a really nice speech by John Bolton. But again, this is how the left operates. And President Trump has pushed it back in their face by Twitter, by these big rallies. Nobody in the history, no politician in history, has done rallies from the very start like he has done. I don't know whether your audience has ever registered to go to one of these events, but they use Everbright, and it's a very well-coordinated event hosting software that they use. And so they know who's coming. They track them. They have their emails. They know everything about them. And so this is another way that the campaign has used technology, and they have outfoxed Google and Facebook and all these other people that think that they had so much going on. And if you go back and look at the visiting request or the visiting books going into the White House, you look at Google, Facebook, Twitter, all these technology companies. When Obama was there, they were in there week after week after week, planning on how to get the vote out and get the personal information of people all over the United States. Well, the Trump team beat them at their own game.
Well, let's face it. Anybody who's familiar with, you know, New York street tactics sees what's going on here. And people who are not are flabbergasted by it. It's like, and then I have people say, oh, he's not going to be able to withstand the pressure. I'm like, he's a New Yorker. They fight for fun.
Yeah.
I mean, they fight about everything. So
he's a street fighter.
Yeah.
And he has shown the Republican Party what it takes to fight.
Yeah.
They have never done this before, and that's why Mitch McConnell and so many Republicans in the Senate, the House, were just flabbergasted over the first year or so. They didn't know how to operate. They don't know what to do, but they've seen the light. And I think you're going to see a much different Republican Party going forward, one that will fight for their principles and fight the issues and fight the Democrats and don't let the Democrats lie about it.
Right.
Yeah,
no, they're all getting an education.
The kinder,
a lot
gentler
of stuff.
World is like, yeah, not really working. So
yeah, that's what happened to President Bush. They just kept quiet, let the Democrats go after him, and they lost.
No, that's right. No, they had to learn how to fight, and he's been a good teacher. So
his style is completely different, and he has a wherewithal that the other ones wouldn't understand, that he immediately responds. He lets
right.
you know.
Right. No, he says what's on his mind.
And as much as people hate it, I got to say, you know, when he fires off things like, you know, horse face, it's like, okay, come on, it's funny. It's mean, but it's funny. I don't know. You know, people, we don't have any fun anymore. I guess presidents aren't supposed to, you know.
Well,
he's a bully.
I'm
like, oh, brother.
Because they let everybody else do that in the political campaigns.
Right.
And they smear him.
Right.
And he's not letting it happen.
No.
He's not giving them an inch to budge. If something happens and, you know, they start attacking family members or cabinet members, he gives them, you know, both barrels of a shotgun.
Yeah, but how much of that do you think he does just to kind of keep them off balance so he can be behind
the
scenes doing something else, you know?
Every time he tweets something like that, like horse face, I hear in the back of my mind, squirrel, you know, and off they go.
He also surfaces that with his staff and says, what does this sound like, you know?
Uh-huh.
Sometimes he does it off the cuff, and other times he probably, you know, puts it to people, you know, that have that, I would say, the more rhetorical way to respond and what's going to get some airtime, you know what I mean?
So what do you figure?
You know, through the president's tweets, he influences foreign policy. He influences you know, some on an election. He influences so much immediately. You know, if we waited for the diplomatic corps to do their job, it would take them 2 weeks.
Right.
So Mexico knows that our soldiers will be on the border, and the president expects them to do something about this caravan. And if they don't, he needs to close the border. And really, I mean, completely close the border from Texas to California, and don't let trucks in, don't let goods in, don't let people in. And Mexico, within 2 days, will support stopping that caravan.
Right. And in fairness to past presidents, you know, they never had the technology to influence the masses like he has, and he uses it.
Yeah, they didn't use it.
There was some of that. Some of it was available, but they never used it. He uses it, and I think that's what really throws them.
Dealing with carrier pigeons, and you got to tie the stuff on their leg and
little smoke signals. That's what we do out here, but we have so many forest fires, you can't read the signals.
Yeah.
All right, boys. Well, we very much enjoyed having you give us an update today.
God bless you. Sorry,
we had our little challenge at the beginning with our connection, but that seems to just be how we do it.
I think it's Bruce.
I don't know. Whenever the four of us try to get together for a little chat in three different cities, gets balled up. So thank you very much
for coming on, guys.
And keep the good updates coming. People really like getting the trumpet. I don't know if that update is out for this week, but if you send it to us, we will post it.
God bless America. God bless us all. And, you know, thank you for having us on. And I hope we're able to give a different angle on a lot of the things that are going on right now.
Absolutely.
You definitely do.
You can catch the archive of this show at wethepeopleradio.us. See you next week.